Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good Sunday morning, everybody. Welcome on in. It is Fighters Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you as the next hour we'll dive all over the world of mixed martial arts and boxing. That's how we do it here on the show. It was good to get boxing back this week. You had Top Rank Boxing, Shakur Stevenson, taking on Felix Caraballo, and a mid-round knockout for Shakur Stevenson. I tell you what, I think Shakur Stevenson gets the award for best fighter with no crowd noise, because he put a shot on Caraballo that, I mean, Caraballo was writhing in pain, getting left to the breadbasket, and the young buck gets one. Look, man, he had some good showcase for him. I thought people were a pain in the ass. You know, the people who were like, "Ooh, no word to anybody," dude. I mean, these guys, they're hard up to train right now. People are just starting to get back into the swing of things. He's young. He's not quite at that point where it's just like what is he? I think they put him to 14-0. You know, can he get to 20 fights before everybody's like, fight somebody? You know, we saw this in the UFC pretty recently with Chase Hooper. Chase Hooper, 20 years old, and they threw him in there with Bruce Leroy, and Bruce Leroy, you know, kind of chewed him up for dinner. Like, it was just like, this, you saw the two of them frying in the fight pan, and Bruce Leroy just a little bit too seasoned for Chase Hooper's ass. So I didn't mind it. I thought it was great to have boxing back. It was fun, and it was a nice showcase for Shakur. So good for him. And obviously great for the Sweet Science to be back. And the big news this week, of course, was the agreement upon Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury. They have come to a 2-fight deal. They will go 50-50 the first way around, 60-40 to the winner. So we got that fight, which is good. I mean, it does lead to the fact of we're going to have an undisputed champion one way or another, I imagine, because I'm sure it's all prevalent on Tyson Fury beating Anthony Joshua. The one thing you got to say about Tyson Fury and his whole deal is, you know, Tyson Fury doesn't have one of these typical straight up with Top Rank deals. He's kind of got a lot of people who help him, manage him, MTK, Frank Warren, all that type of stuff. He gets these deals done. You know, he came back from his comeback against, losing all the weight and whatnot. Had a couple fights, fought Deontay Wilder when a lot of people thought it was too soon to do so. Rematch wasn't too big of an issue. They had a deal in place to, you know, they both had another fight, had the rematch, which was a 2-fight deal just like this one. They have their third fight probably coming up at the end of the year. And then, you know, right down the way, he has the AJ fight in the marks. And some people may be like, oh, you're going to overlook. You know, Tyson Fury is a lot of things, but you could say for this, he does say what he means. You know, like, he isn't one of these guys where, like, you know, a lot of people thought, him walking down Deontay Wilder, him putting his weight on him, it's all a bunch of crap. Did exactly what he said he was going to do. And so I don't think it's going to be a case of him looking ahead and looking forward. So it's kind of cool that we have this matchup put forth. It's, I'm not ruling Deontay Wilder out yet. I still think that he's got the ability to go out there and upset Tyson Fury. Some small adjustments have to be made for sure. He definitely looks like he's got to be in better shape for this one as far as, taking shots and be able to keep going and what it's going to be like to have Tyson lean on him. Because look, Tyson's not getting any smaller. So what can he do? You know, what can he do to when there's exhaustion there and all that type of stuff? Because the other fight, there wasn't a lot of pressure on him. You know, it was he was getting boxed up, but he wasn't getting leaned on. You know, it wasn't one of these things where I think he was getting exhausted. And I don't think of Deontay as a guy who taps out on energy quickly. So what is the strategy going to be for him? I think in these times, when you take a beating like that, a lot of people don't see a route for you to go win. For me, I look at Deontay, I know how he's got to go win. He's got to find a way to get that right hand on Tyson Fury to create, and especially get some distance between him and Tyson Fury so he can load up on it. He's not a guy who's going to come in with one of those like patented uppercuts or anything like that. Like, he needs to get distance so he can have that wild shot come from somewhere, load up on it a little bit. And Tyson just didn't give him any place to breathe that last fight. But as far as if we're to look to the matchup of Tyson versus AJ, this again, if I am a Tyson Fury fan, I'm not too worried about this. First of all, we got to remember how much the guy was out of the sport, and he's only had, you know, like five fights on this comeback trail where he has really gotten better every single time we've seen him. You know, maybe the only time you could argue that he didn't was against Schwartz, where he had the bad cut, which, you know, probably would have been stopped if he was a lesser fighter, if he was a lesser name. So, but other than that, I think we see a new bag of tricks. We do see a guy getting better. Remember, he's not old. I mean, these guys, heavyweights can go for a little bit. I don't think he's going to fight much longer because, again, I don't think of him as a bowl leaper. I think if he says that he's got four fights left in him and he's got these, you know, the Wilder fight, the two AJ fights, and then, you know, maybe some kind of super fight, I think that's it for him. I don't think there is going to be anything else for Tyson Fury. How does AJ beat him? You know, AJ's got to be able to give him something that I think almost makes the Tyson Fury fight like the old Tyson Fury, where he's on the outside, he's a little bit worried. Can he catch him with something that that's impactful? You know, there's just a couple things that would worry me if I'm an Anthony Joshua fan around it. One, if Tyson does start carrying around this ability to put people away, if we do see him put Deontay Wilder away, I'd be worried about that, because that's really a tool that not a lot of people go into. You didn't go into Tyson Fury fights fearing the knockout. You feared getting shut out. And so now you have a whole other ball of wax that you have to deal with a guy who's bigger than everybody. So I think it's tough. I think it's tough to look at this and find where is the gauge for Joshua to win, because I don't think we've seen the best Joshua for a long time. I'm not saying that he's washed or over the hill. I just feel like we haven't seen him take on, you know, we haven't seen him that blood and guts cut type of performance that we saw him win against Vladimir Klitschko with, where it was one of the most thrilling heavyweight fights you'll ever see. But the other ones, there's been a lot of kind of waiting around, a lot of, you know, there have been fine performances, but they haven't been spectacular. Even the Andy Ruiz fight, I thought that he could have gotten them out of there in much more spectacular fashion, especially the way that Andy beat him. And a lot of people look at AJ and they say, and AJ defenders will say, well, so he shows a more well-rounded game plan and you're going to rip him for it. It's not rip him for it. It's to show the world that was a fluke. You know, when Haseem Rahman knocked out Lennox Lewis made sure people knew that was a fluke. And with AJ, I thought that he certainly got to him early, put him down early in that fight, and he still fought that fight. You know, he made his point. It's almost like he made his point, but he kind of just let it roll. He kind of just kept it rolling enough just so he could get to the finish line and get the win and get his belts back. It is going to be cool one way or another that we're going to have an undisputed heavyweight champion of the world. That's been way too long. And I don't really care if somebody else ends. If AJ ends up having to give up one of these belts in the meanwhile, there's not going to be one of these. Yes, there'll be another piece gone, but with Deontay having a piece of the heavyweight championship, he had a claim to the title. He had held on that championship for a long time. He had beaten some good guys. he had an undefeated resume. He knocked everybody out. There was a legit claim that he was the scariest heavyweight on the planet. You know, if this ends up going somebody else, if Usyk ends up getting a piece of the belt or somebody, you know, I don't think we're going to have that same feeling that we did with, oh, we need to have this undisputed, undefeated heavyweight champion of the world, and we need that closure. So if AJ does end up losing one of the belts along the way, not going to be a big deal to me. I still think that Tyson Fury versus AJ is for the undisputed heavyweight championship of the world, because you'll have the guys with the most belts, the most prestige, the longtime rivalry, all that stuff wrapped into one. And so therefore, what else could you possibly want in a heavyweight champion? So yeah, maybe somebody will have a piece of it, but they're not going to have a real claim to the title. It's just, you know, congratulations, you have this cool trophy. So glad that we got that one, and that one's cinched up. We'll be back with more on Fighter's Fury right after this. Welcome back. It's Fighter's Fury, everybody. Tobin here with you. We got the chance this week to have Sugar Rashad Evans on the morning show. He's absolutely fantastic. Dude's like the godfather of South Florida mixed martial arts, and really gave a lot of great insight. We got to talk to him about Mike Tyson's return, as he's been hanging out with Iron Mike lately. We talked about the fighter pay issue. That's been obviously the big prevalent story, and you know, we'll get into more twists and turns of that when we come back from this. But I want you to hear Rashad's insight on this. He was fantastic. Also, Rashad's been teammates of Gilbert Burns and Kamaru Usman for a long time, from the Boca gym to the Lantana gym to Hard Knocks 365. So he gave some fascinating insight into what we can expect from that matchup between Kamaru Usman and Gilbert Burns for the welterweight championship of the world. Here's our conversation with Sugar Rashad Evans. Rashad, thanks for the time, man. Really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. Thank you.
We were actually talking last segment. We were talking a little bit. Leroy was reminiscing about the old Tyson fights, how much of a great atmosphere that was. I saw you were hanging out with Tyson recently. You're now his tag team partner, going out there. You're going to take on a bunch of wrestlers with him?
Yeah, I mean, you know, listen, if it goes down like that, yeah, you know, I'm with Tyson's crew, his entourage, you know. Tyson's been getting active lately, and, you know, part of him getting active and part of him wanting to fight is just him being out there, you know. So we're gonna go out in L.A. in a few weeks and get some training in with him. But, yeah, he wants to mix it up in all arenas.
Isn't Tyson his own entourage, though? He don't seem like you just walk up on Tyson.
Nah, yeah, that's true. You don't walk up on Tyson. But here's the thing, Tyson is very deceptive because he's very humble and he's easy and he's very approachable. But at the same time, he has a fuse. You know what I'm saying? And he doesn't like to be handled too much. So then when he gets to the point where people are grabbing at him, then he gets ready to bite somebody.
Is it like a, like, was he a guy you looked up to just as a young fight fan, Rashad? Like, is it weird being around Tyson at this point? Like, is it surreal, or is it like, have you gotten time around him so now it's kind of normal, or is it always a little surreal being around Tyson?
I mean, when I think about it, like when I sit back and think, like, man, this is the guy who, you know, I grew up watching on TV, and you know, who my family would get around and watch his fights and all that kind of stuff. It is surreal, you know. But like when I you know, when we have our quiet moments and we sit and we talk about, you know, just about life and things like that on a deeper level, then it's like, oh, he's my friend, you know. But it's still nevertheless, like, every once in a while I'm just like, dang, that's Mike Tyson, you know.
So Rashad, when I was in Cleveland, he had a place there, and we would go to the same bar and we'd sit together for a couple of times every now and then. So he knew all the, you know, guys that would hang out there. And the one thing that took us all off guard, caught us all off guard, was how soft-spoken he was. And we like, man, this guy is a violent dude. And he'd be like, hey, how you doing? Sit down. What y'all getting into? And you're like, whoa! I mean, it catches you off guard how soft-spoken and humble this dude is.
It really does, man. And then when he opens his mouth and he lets you know some of his life philosophy, then you feel like, wow, this dude has it figured out in areas where I haven't even thought about yet, you know. And that's And that's when the complexity of what Mike Tyson is really start, you know, taking hold, because you see somebody who's a complete enigma. On one hand, he has this ability to be so destructive, but then on the other side, he has this eloquent, you know, intellectual side that's able to dissect many, you know, deep intellectual matters.
Before we get to UFC, one more thing on him. Like, do you, like, talking to him, does the comeback thing seem legit? Like, why does he want to come back, and what do you think that looks like for him if he does?
I think he does want to come back. I think for the most part, what it looks like is, you know, maybe having a few exhibitions or something like that. But I don't know how serious of a level is going to be. I just know that he's just excited to be training again. And for Mike Tyson, you know, if you follow him or you know him, you know that competing and trying to train is something that he struggled with, because he's worked so hard to get where he's at. On an egoic level, where he feels as if, like, when he starts to do things like fighting and he gets the attention and he gets the accolades, he doesn't want to do things to feed that ego, because he knows how intoxicating that is, and he knows the path that it took him down last time. So he was kind of weary about that, but being the fact that he's done so much therapy, you know, cathartic therapy, you know, with his, you know, with the toad and with other, you know, psilocybin psychedelics, it's been able to have him leapfrog as far as, you know, just being able to mentally put himself with understanding that he'd be able to go back to competing without igniting all those egoic feelings, you know?
This weekend, better knockout, Sean O'Malley or Cody Garbrandt? Which one did you like better?
Gosh.
Which one was better?
Oh, my gosh.
They're both so sick.
They were both so sick, man, but I got to give it to Cody Garbrandt, man. You know why? Because that punch was for me, man. You know, I was on I ended up my career losing, you know, and I wanted to have that moment where he did. You know, he was on a 3-fight losing streak, and at that point, you know, you become your own worst enemy, because – competing is psychological for the most part. And when you lose a psychological edge, that's the hardest thing to get back. So to see him come back after being knocked out 3 times in a row and to get a knockout in devastating fashion that he did, it made me almost well up inside, man.
What do you think is left for Amanda Nunes to do, man? I marvel at how damn good she is, and every time she goes out there, she just seems at like another clear level than the rest of the women she's taken on. If at this point in her career, like, would you think she just steps away and wait for something to come along? Do you just rest? Like, when you're at this level of dominance, what do you think keeps that drive going for someone like that? Because it feels like all the challenges they throw at her, she's just taking care of it so easily.
Yeah, I think at this point with her, you know, since now that she's really competing in the league of her own in so many levels, I think right now, I think she just has to compete against herself and just try to make it so that she makes a record so ridiculous and outstanding that no one would ever, you know, surpass what Amanda Nunes has done. You know, thus far, she's already has taken a step with the champs and become the first to defend her belt at a championship weight class where she won the belt. So she's already kind of even separated herself from the greats. So now it's just, you know, she just keeps on growing. But I would love to see another fight and maybe a part 3 with her and Shevchenko again, because I think Shevchenko is grown tremendously as well. And I think that if they fight at maybe 135 or catch weight, that could be something to see.
Now, you've been one of the faces of the UFC before, Rashad. You've been to the absolute top of the sport. What are you making of the trend that's gone on the last couple of weeks? John Jones threatened to step away. Masvidal basically walking away from the championship fight with Usman and asking for his release, and Conor having his, you know, quote unquote retirement, although it seems more like posturing. What do you make of this? Do you think this is almost like an uprising of the stars that want to change something with the UFC, or do you think these are all kind of case by case, different, disgruntled, and that's a natural thing with fighting? What do you make of all that?
No, I think these guys are waking up, you know, and you have to understand like the different eras of fighting, you know, and when I was fighting in my era, we fought to prove that we were a sport. You know, I remember winning the Ultimate Fighter show and, you know, my mother-in-law, she says, okay, now you won. Are you going to get a real job? And I didn't get upset because that was, that, that was the thinking back then. You know, at the end of the day, you couldn't make a living off of being a fighter. So I understood the sentiment. But nowadays, these guys, you know, and when we fought just to fight on, you know, these, you know, to fight on the big stage and these platforms that these guys are fighting on, now that these guys are fighting on these platforms, they know what these platforms mean. And they know what, you know, athletes who compete on these platforms, they get. And, you know, these guys also understand, you know, the power and currency of their following. And social media has educated, you know, fighters so much on their own worth. And now there's algorithms that you can break down and you can figure out your own worth, you know, based on, you know, your following and whatnot. So you can kind of come with some kind of calculation on what your value is to a specific card. So fighters are coming in there with more knowledge because, you know, people who are surrounding themselves around these fighters know there's money in the sport that's yet to be given out.
What do you, like, from your standpoint, do you think it's, I heard, I think Daniel Cormier say yesterday where he said, I think it's better to try and keep these things private because these usually have more progress if you just go directly and you don't air out the grievances. Do you think there is a benefit in making all this stuff private to get people behind you and let people know that you are upset, or is it better to just keep it behind closed doors?
Well, if you keep it behind closed doors, then, you know, then you may not have as much leverage in the situation when it comes down to having more support of others joining in on the fight. You know, if all these people would have maybe aired out their grievances in private, then when each of them confronted their grievance, they may have thought they had been the only one going through it. But now that there's more of them sounding off on the same sound, they all can understand the resonation and they all are kind of sounding off on the same pitch. So I think that, you know, there is more strength in numbers, but here's the reality of the situation. It may just be bad time for it all. And by that, I mean, there's never a good time to form, there's never a good time for something like this. I mean, the fact that, you know, there's always going to be, oh, we can, you know, wait for this happen. And you can always put it off. But what I mean by this might not be the timing is, you know, economically speaking, you know, we're being thrusted into a world where we don't really know what's going to be. We don't really know what's on the other side of everything that we're facing. And right now we're living day by day. And, you know, we don't know what you know, the travel restrictions are going to be and if they're going to let up or how, what is going to happen on an economic level. So the UFC has to be able to economically maneuver if there is such things that they have to make an adjustment for. So I can understand them holding back on wanting to give maybe some of the money that they were unexpectedly having to spend, you know, because you got to also think about this, you know, now that they're having to compete under these new guidelines, there's a whole new structure that has to come into place. You know, there's a whole new financial burden that comes into place too, as far as the PPE equipment, as far as testing equipment, as far as making sure everybody's meeting the protocol, and all these different things that they now have to jump through, hoops they have to jump through, is coming with a financial price tag on it. So all these things are hitting their bottom line, which is hitting their fighters' bottom line. And I hear in a lot of different sports that, you know, they may have to revisit the whole pay scale to kind of restructure things so then that way the sports can continue.
Rashad, I'm new to MMA. So Tobin started taking me to the little local cards probably 2 years ago, and I'm in it. And one of the things that I hate about it is I look forward to these fights, you know, the top guys fighting, and they're not fighting. And I'm tired of watching these guys, you know, fight the bottom tier of you know, the rankings. I want to see these guys fight each other. What is it going to take for these guys to just go ahead on and fight? Because I don't want it to be all about money. I want to see the competition. I want to see them fight.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing about it. Like, there's a few different things that can be holding up the fact of having these big blockbuster fights. Because we've seen some big fights. Like, we've seen, you know, a title fight with Amanda Nunes and stuff like that. But I know what you're talking about when you're talking about these big blockbuster fights. You're talking about the Khabibs, the Masvidals, the John Jones and Ngannous and those kind of big blockbusters. I think a big part of them holding off on really pushing those big blockbusters going forward is the fact that, you know, live gate, you know what I'm saying? Like I said, it goes back to this whole situation we're pushed in on a world level. You know, do we forego the possibility of things opening up and putting a blockbuster on and having a live gate? Or do we just say, you know what, let's have one of these big fights on and just see what we can do with just how things are? And then at the same time, you also have to understand some of the biggest fighters in the game with the biggest names, like a McGregor and Habib, they can't come over to the United States because of the international flight restrictions. So this whole thing is kind of filling a huge, you know, convolution in the whole UFC plans. And, you know, to their credit, they're doing their best to try to be the first one back and try to be the first one to get the fighters competing regularly. But at the same time, you know, there's a lot of pains that they still need to go through. And it's difficult because, you know, it's not – there's this has never been done before, and there's no blueprint to do this.
See, I feel better hearing that from you, okay? Because I understand it, and Tobin has told me, you know, about the gate, and they're waiting, you know – they want to get the whole pomp and circumstance of these big fights, the lead up, the gate, all these things that make a fight exciting. They want to wait before they put these fights, you know, until these moments. Then why won't Dana just say that? Why does he come out as abrasive as the fighters are?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it may just be his own denial in the process. Maybe he's not willing to just say that, you know, things may not go back to normal for another year or so, or make it so that, you know, because it's scary to think about for the most part, from our point of view, when we hear things like we may not be able to return back to normal and do the things that we used to do for a year from now. You know, that brings an unsteady feeling in your stomach. You know what I'm saying? So I do understand them not saying it, but it doesn't take away from the reality of what we're facing here. You know what I'm saying? Here we are, you know, in the beginning of the summer, and it doesn't look as if like things are going to even open up until, you know, fall. You know what I'm saying? So there's still a lot that has to be done with this whole thing on a world level, and trying to run a live sport event during this whole thing is tremendously difficult.
Before we get you out of here, Rashad, the fight we were looking forward to the most, obviously the old South Florida crosstown rivalry, you know, Kamaru versus Jorge, that's hit a negotiating snag. Now it looks like Gilbert Burns might slide in there. He's teammates with Kamaru. How weird is that? That the idea that he may have to fight, you know, fight for a title outside of the same gym. Like, how does that work? I guess gym politics wise, is that going to be a difficult thing for them to navigate?
I'll be lying if I say it wasn't, because it always is. And it always is, just based on the fact that whenever you're a fighter and you have to choose your camp, you pick people from your team, and you have to choose what you choose your teammates. And you, at that point, you decide and you see who's riding with you and who's not riding with you. And whoever's not riding with you, you remember that. And it's just something that stays with you. So then even after this whole fight thing is done and over with, that's something you never forget. You never forget who chose what side. And here's another weird thing about this whole thing is the fact that, before this all kind of happened, Kamaru was training at different gyms, and now he's kind of he's going to train in Denver. You know, he's doing some training in Denver. So, that may have been a disconnect too, as far as, you know, some of his teammates not feeling that, you know, not feeling that, that team camaraderie around him. You know what I'm saying?
So you think it's a sign he may jump to another place to train train somewhere else if it does come down to that?
Well, I know for a fact he's training in Denver, but what I'm saying is his training in Denver may have been misconstrued as like he's not being part of the team and he's leaving the team, which could have caused a little bit of dissension amongst the ranks and been like, oh yeah, well, I got my role now. Now I want that title. You know what I'm saying? So there could be a little bit of that going on, but also at the same time, you know, getting the title shot and earning it the way Gilbert did, coming from 155 and fighting all the way up through 170, and now, getting his title shot, you can understand him wanting to take it. But my thing is this right here. You know, him and they've trained together for so long. Even in this past camp, Tyron Woodley camp, Kamaru sparred with, you know, Gilbert a couple rounds. You know, so it's one of those things. It's no doubt a fight that is a hard fight on an emotional level. And it's going to be a hard fight for Kamaru on an emotional level because we all came up together. You know what I'm saying? We trained at three gyms together over the past 10 years, and we all helped each other grow. So it's a blessing, and at the same time, it's one of those it's a sad thing too as well too. But you know, it shows that the team has done the work to earn themselves to the proper position.
Rashad, we always appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No problem. Bye.
Thanks to Rashad for joining the show. We appreciate the former light heavyweight champion of the world stopping by. When we come back, we'll get into a little bit of some of the news of this week. Dana White responding to all the fighter pay issues, lashing out, all that stuff, whatnot. That's back when Fighter Fury comes back after this. Welcome back, everybody. It is Fighter's Fury here on 790 The Ticket. Tobin here with you. So some of the news of the week that we had in the world of mixed martial arts. So a couple fights. One fight that got announced, Junior Dos Santos. He is going to be fighting Jairzinho Rozenstruik at UFC 252 in August. So that'll be on the Stipe DC card, which will be cool. I was a big fan of what they did back with this last pay-per-view card where it was Cody and O'Malley and all these guys, all the bantamweights that were fighting now, Garbrandt and O'Malley, they're like starting to square off. Aljamain Sterling's right on the doorstep of a title shot, all that type of stuff. So I thought a really fantastic job. I would like them to do that, you know, something with heavyweight. I don't know if they'll get Francis Ngannou on that because obviously, you know, Francis is in line for the title. So neither one who wins, Rozenstruik or Dos Santos, who wins this fight, neither one of them is going to be up for a title shot next, especially Jairzinho, who definitely has some building up to do. I think he could get right back in there and fight Junior Dos Santos and look fantastic, and he'll be right back on track. But definitely, when you lose the way that he did, much like Francis did, when Francis lost the way he did to Stipe, you just got some making up to do. So fun fight, looking forward to it. But yeah, O'Malley and Garbrandt have been getting into it back and forth. And that's a fun fight, man. We said that a lot of people jumped on that afterwards. That would be a really fun matchup. They both had these crazy KO walk-off knockouts on the same card. They're both young. Cody's a former champion. So if O'Malley beats him, the only thing I would say where I would be hesitant to do it would be almost to protect Garbrandt a little bit, because I think if Garbrandt beats O'Malley, O'Malley's fine. You lose to a former champ, there's no shame in that. But if you are Cody and you end up losing to the guy who may be the future of the division, I think that's a tough swim up, because let's just say O'Malley then just becomes champion. Cody's obviously got title aspirations. Does he want to be the gateway to O'Malley winning a championship? Because that's what's ultimately going to happen. If O'Malley beats Cody, a lot of people are going to start calling for title shot for him. You know, that he's ready. He's beaten a former champion, although one who has a bit of a dusty record over the last couple of years. He had beat a former champion. They're going to start talking about it. If Cody loses to O'Malley, I do think there's going to be some people wondering, okay, here we go again. Is Cody washed? Did he lose? You know, was the win over Sun Tzu? Was that, you know, beating a guy who was a little bit past his prime? So I think the fight for sure is a bigger risk for Garbrandt. However, if Garbrandt does win, you're beating, you know, the hottest name in the sport, and you're kind of taking back what was yours. I just think it does have a good storyline to it. You know, two great strikers, both with ferocious knockouts in their last fights. And not only that, but one guy was the future of this division. Now he's on his way back. O'Malley kind of is the future of the division. It just writes itself. I think it's fantastic. Dana White did say this week, by the way, that Khabib Nurmagomedov, Justin Gaethje, he's likely going to pay-per-view in Abu Dhabi. So they're going to be over there for a little bit. And that would be in September, which is going to be a fun fight for sure. It does lend, we are still in a weird spot with the UFC because we need to know what is going to happen to all these guys who are on the shelf. Dana White's kind of just like putting his head down and moving past it. You know, he went this week and was kind of like, this is nothing new. And he goes, there's just a bunch, you know, of people who don't know the sport covering the sport. And if I could just address that for a second, first of all, you wanted this. Like, don't act like this is some horrible thing that you have more people covering your sport. You wanted this. This is a big reason why you came back. The other thing that's funny is this is the same guy. He'll hose down any media who goes up against him. You know, like he'll go out there and he'll call mixed martial arts, the people who cover mixed martial arts, the weeniest, wimpiest people in all the world. And now he's upset because the people who don't know mixed martial arts, they're in here not talking about it. I mean, Dana would honestly just prefer just you throw it on the television and everybody's just happy. It's not the way it works. And controversy sells too. So don't act like it's a horrible thing. This is different. It's different because the UFC's never been in a position where they've had three guys upset with the company. They've had, you know, to Dana's point, they've had moments in their sport where they've been what you guess you could call star hungry. Like, you know, Ronda leaving, Connor being out boxing, Anderson being gone, GSP being retired, no Brock Lesnar. They've been through those lulls before where there really wasn't a quote-unquote mainstream star for the UFC. And so it's a good thing right now. I think the UFC is not in that place. I think they got a lot of fantastic fighters. If they're not even stars, I think the UFC, the talent is better than it's ever been. I mean, fighting is better than it's ever been. I think from a talent sample, I think with the things we see in the octagon from week to week, just continue to amaze me. Like how good these guys are, the skills that they develop, all that type of stuff. But it is funny. He's in the spot where he's just like, you know, we got all these new eyes in the sport. Nobody knows what they're talking about. And it's like, yeah, but you were hosing down the people who were here talking about your sport the whole time anyway. So that one's weird to me. But yeah, no, you know, look, we're still in the spot of no man's land when it comes to Jorge and when it comes to Connor and when it comes to Jones. I don't know. I guess the easy answer would be why not have, if they both wanted to fix their money issues, and maybe opponent issues, could you do Masvidal versus Connor? You know, that's one that Dana's poo-pooed before. Connor's been upset that he did. Geez, George's been wanting that more than the Kamaru fight. Let's be frank about it. Could they end up ever having that happen? Would that be the cure-all here? I think it certainly would for George. I think if you offered Masvidal the Conor McGregor fight, I think that solves everything for him. I think it's a good comeback. I think if Conor doesn't want to fight Tony and you want to say, well, who's a tougher matchup, Tony or Jorge? I don't think Jorge is going to try and bring the awkwardness. I don't think Jorge is going to go and try and bring him to the ground, some weird ass choke. It's still a violent fight either way. So, you know, like, look, let's not act like Tony was pulling guard against Justin Gaethje. He was up there standing, banging and took a beating. You know, and there was talks like, to the point of Dana said this week, well, Connor was offered the opportunity to fight Tony Ferguson and turn it down, said, I'm not a replacement fighter. And I do think there's an argument to say if you're Connor, like if the whole point of this is to get back to Khabib, and you're turning down a golden ticket to do that, can you really be upset if they're not like gonna just roll over and give you the interim title at your leisure? Like we gave you the opportunity. So I do see an argument from there, because his problem isn't so much money. I mean, Connor and the UFC's butt over money before. This seems like he's upset that they're messing up his plans to get back to the top. Which is, you know, it's weird. I mean, like, you would think the UFC wants him there. Dana was talking about after the Cowboy fight how much he wants Connor versus Khabib. And We're like, well, what about, you know, Tony Ferguson versus Khabib and all that? What if he messes it up? So that's neither here nor there. The Jorge fight, I don't know where they go from here. You know, Dana mentioned the Diaz brothers that he compared. This kind of annoyed me because he's like, oh, he compared Masvidal to the Diaz brothers. And what is that? Because Jorge Masvidal has been in this game for a long, long time, right? He's not a guy who's just like up and vanished and has no-showed press conferences. I mean, you know, you couldn't get the Diaz brothers to do all the media that Masvidal was doing for his fight with Nate Diaz or his fight with Ben Askren, where he's become the kind of this media darling. Everybody wants to have Jorge on their show. He's become, you know, one of the big gets, if you will, of the UFC. The other thing is, you know, the Diaz brothers, they're kind of in here, out there, sporadic. I mean, Jorge was coming off a busy year, man. This isn't like Masvidal wanted to come in and have this year where he was iced on the shelf. We talked to him at Radio Row, and he said that 2020 was going to be a horror show, that this was, if you thought 19 was going to be a big deal, wait till you see what 2020 was going to bring. That's coming off a year where he traveled to London and fought Darren Till. He took on Ben Askren. Everybody said it was a nightmare matchup. And then, you know, obviously had the big catapult show in MSG where he brought the mother bleeping Rock. So, yeah, excuse me if I don't buy that Jorge Masvidal is like the Diaz brothers, that he marches to his own beat. Is he a unique fellow? Certainly. Is he as real as he gets? Certainly. Does he have that in common with the Diaz brothers? Absolutely. Is he a fun fighter to watch? Yeah, he has that in common. But, you know, this guy's put a lot of years in the game. This you know, and I think when you think of the Diaz brothers, you think, oh, difficult to deal with. It's like, really? He does this one time in his career, and all of a sudden you're comparing to Nick and Nate Diaz, guys who would, you know, retire, no show, all that type of stuff. I thought that was wholly unfair of Dana White to do that to Masvidal. And I don't know what the answer is for Jorge. Because if it's not a Conor fight, what do? Do you just sit here and wait for the winner of Kamaru versus Gilbert? He can fight Colby. I mean, that's a fun personal grudge match, especially that Colby's left ATT now. Great backstory. Those guys can main event. Could frankly main event a pay-per-view if you really wanted to do it. There was another one that I thought would be a fun fight for him too. It's escaping me right now. Not Conor, not Colby. Oh, another fun fight they could do, but I just don't think, you know, for George, I do think it's a little bit of a him punching down, is fighting Leon Edwards. But for me, that's having like another number one contender fight that he doesn't really need. He doesn't need to fight Leon Edwards. For the fans, it'll be fun because we'll get to see that three-piece in a soda 100 or so times played back. But he doesn't need to do the fight. And for me, if you don't need to fight a guy of Leon Edwards' caliber, if you don't need to fight that guy to earn a title shot, why do it? And if they were offering him, you know, the reports were they offered him Nate Diaz money at the last minute for the Kamaru fight, but the damage was done. They're not going to offer him even probably what they did for Kamaru for Leon Edwards. So I don't know if that solves anything. I think that we're probably just going to sit idly by. And maybe we'll get Jorge Masvidal at the end of the year for a title shot. I mean, maybe that's the hope. I think it's either for the money that he probably wants, the only options for Masvidal are probably title shot. He has to be, and I guess be happy with what they're paying him, Nick or Nate Diaz and Connor. I think those are, you know, that those are kind of the cure-alls to the situation. But they're not guaranteed for sure. That's our show for this week, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. If you missed any of the show, download the podcast, radio.com app, Apple Podcasts, YouTube. Look up Fighters Fury. Look up Tobin on YouTube. Subscribe to us. Give us a like, a comment. Much appreciated. We're trying to build that platform for you guys. So hope that you guys can join us there. And everybody have a great rest of your week. See ya.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.